So if you have a Bible, I'm going to invite you to take out your Bible, turn to the book of Exodus, the second book in the Bible, Exodus chapter 3. We're going to read that in a few moments. So we are in this sermon series on the book of Exodus, and we're slowly making our way through it. And we've gotten as far as chapter 3 this morning. And it's a fairly, I think, well-known story, at least to a number of us who know the story of the Bible a little bit, the story of Moses and God on the mountain and Moses coming in the burning bush. I mean, God coming in the burning bush and talking to Moses. If you have access to our website, there are some sermon notes on our website. So if you want to follow along, they should be there under upcoming news or something like that. It's, of course, a Thanksgiving weekend, and as Angela said, so much of our service this morning is opportunities for us to give thanks. So we've been singing some songs of thanks, and that will continue later on in the service, and later on we'll have a chance to give our monies as a thank offering or thank worship to God. Some of us have brought food this morning for our local food bank as a way of giving thanks to God for His provision for us, and also later on the service, also testimonies of thanksgiving. And I'm so thankful this year, at least I think five of you have talked to us and told us, I want to give thanks, I have something to give thanks for. So we have at least, I think, five or more people who are going to come. But if you have a thanks this morning, be thinking about that and thinking about maybe some words to say of gratitude to others, of gratitude to God for the thing or the things you're thankful for. And this morning, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, what I want to do after the reading is just focus on three things in the passage I'm thankful for, and maybe you'll be thankful with me for these things as well. So let me invite Sharon to come and read from Exodus 3, verses 1 to 17.
I'm reading from the New American Standard Version, The Mission of Moses. Therefore, come now, and I will send... wrong page. Okay, Exodus 3, 1 to 17, American Standard, the burning bush. Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses! And he said, Here I am. Then God said, Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He also said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Now behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. The mission of Moses. Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And God said, Certainly I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. Then Moses said to God, "Behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you.' Now they may say to me, 'What is his name?' What shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God furthermore said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial name to all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared to me and said, I am indeed concerned about you and what has been done to you in Egypt. So I said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite, to a land flowing with milk and honey.'"
This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I'm feeling a little bit of a need because of the story to take off my shoes this morning. And I'm hoping, especially in the front row, it won't be too much for you. If it gets too much, then please let me know if there's some inconvenience, especially to the air around you. Now, I'm wondering if anyone knows what mountain this is. Blah, 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 blah. Horeb. Someone say Horeb? No. Sorry. This is Mount Everest. Maybe someone said Mount Everest. At least that's what, again, Google told me. It looks like Everest. I've not been there. Anyone been to Everest? I'm sure some people would like to go to Everest. Everest, of course, is the highest mountain in the world. Quite remarkable, sometimes when we hear these facts, 8,800 meters, almost 9 kilometers up, straight up. And people are constantly trying to get to the top, and more people actually are going every year. So last year, 2018, how many people made it to the top of Everest? I was kind of amazed. Oh, that's a lot, 9,000. 800, which is still a lot of people. Because you can't just go up there any time. There's a certain window, as far as my understanding is. Everest was actually named after Sir George Everest, who was a British surveyor in India, early 19th century. But I actually like the name that the people around Mount Everest give it, right? People in India and Tibet and China, their name for the mountain is Holy Mountain, or Holy Mother, or Holy Mother Peak, which I never knew those names for this mountain, but for me, it rings with the story this morning, because people who live there and live around there, they have the sense of mountains as the Bible does, right? The Bible sees mountains as holy places, places where heaven and earth meet. God and people meet on mountains, and when God meets with his people on a mountain, something holy happens, right? Now, what mountain is this? Maybe you can't see it so well. So this is the traditional site of where they think Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai is. The place of this morning story, which I have been to the bottom of it. I have been around there. We didn't actually go up on the mountain. I have to be honest with you this morning. As Sharon was reading the story, I'm wondering, why would Moses take sheep to Mount Sinai? I know that there, at least when I was there, there were animals on the bottom, and there were camels and all kinds of stuff. But this is a pretty desolate place. Mount Sinai is in the Sinai Desert, or southeastern Egypt. That's what I would call it, the location of the story from Exodus chapter 3. I do recognize there are some people who think Mount Sinai is somewhere else. There are some disagreements over where the real Mount Sinai is. Some people think it is in present-day Saudi Arabia, which sounds interesting to me. I never knew that till recently, but I know there is some difference of opinion. But Sinai, at least if this is the place, or if it's some other place, called the Mountain of Moses or the Mountain of Yahweh, the Mountain of the Lord, it is a holy place. And if this is Mount Sinai, or if the other Mount Sinai is the real Mount Sinai, it doesn't matter to me. I'm thankful for Mount Sinai, because if this is Mount Sinai, it is not the highest mountain. It's not even on the list of the top 10 highest mountains in Egypt. It's only 2,300 meters up. So Grouse Mountain, I was reading, is about 1,400 meters up. It's a little higher than Grouse. And if I might say, and this might sound a little bit blasphemous for me to say, it's not a beautiful place. It's kind of rugged, rocky, kind of knobby, a desolate mountain, not particularly beautiful or breathtaking. For me, not like Mount Everest. Mount Everest, for me, looks breathtaking. This looks like a chunk of rock. But I'm thankful for this because Sinai is an ordinary mountain. And God doesn't need the most beautiful mountain, the highest mountain, to meet people on. He doesn't need the biggest building or the most beautiful building to meet people. God shows up, and this mountain, in some sense, will do. This mountain, I want to say, becomes like a temple. Because whenever God meets with his people, whether individual or a group of people, that place becomes like a temple. And I'm so thankful for ordinary, normal Mount Sinai, because this is God's typical way of working. Meeting in ordinary spaces and places and mountains, meeting with ordinary people, like Moses or me or you. A second thing I'm thankful for this morning is God coming and meeting with Moses. Now, very obviously from our story this morning, Moses is not looking for God. Right? He's just tending his sheep. He's not on some kind of religious pilgrimage. He's not looking. Where's the burning bush? Where's the voice of God? He's just going about his ordinary day, taking care of his sheep, and then God shows up in the ordinary event of his life. Which is where God so often wants to show up, not just for Moses, but also for us. I'm hoping there are moments on Sunday morning where you sense, oh, God showed up, or I sensed something, or there was an experience that I had with God or the Spirit of God. But I'm actually hoping more often in your ordinary life, like not on Sunday morning, you sense the presence of God. And not only is God showing up, and not only is he revealing himself in this burning bush, or through this burning bush, which is an amazing image of who God is, right? God the fire in the bush, but the bush is not being consumed, which I think is meant to be also a symbol for what God is meant to do in our lives, right? God could live inside a human being like a fire, but not burn up that person, right? The bush can still exist, the human being can still exist, but God could be inside like a holy fire doing his work, and the person's still alive, still able to function. But I'm so thankful not only is God showing up, but he's telling Moses who he is. And this amazing verse, If people, the Israelites in Egypt, ask me who you are, then what am I going to tell them? And God says, tell them I am who I am. And scholars have written piles of books. Like, what does this mean? I am who I am. One writer says this is the most basic fact, the most ultimate fact. Of all the facts that there are in the universe, this is the one at both the bottom and the top. The foundation of all that there is. Nothing is more basic than to say God is. And when God says, I am who I am, he's basically saying, I am not who you think I am, right? I am who I am. You do not define me. I am not defined by you or by the creation or by creatures. I am defined by myself. I am who I am. I have life within me. I don't take life from you. I actually give life to you. I'm not dependent on you. I am who I am. You are dependent on me. And we could say that as God comes in this burning bush, this fire in the bush, speaking to Moses, it's like what they call a theophany. It's a sight or a vision of God, but we can also call this morning a revelation. God is revealing who he is. He's telling Moses who he is. And if God does not do this, if God does not come in the fire, if God does not speak to Moses, Moses will never know who God is. If God does not come in the fire, if God does not say, this is who I am, Moses will never know who God is. So in some sense, God needs to reveal himself to Moses, because Moses and we need that revelation. We need God to tell us who he is. Now, there are some people who read the Bible. When they read the Bible, they say, oh, I've been reading the Bible, and I know what the Bible is. The Bible is an account of humanity's search for God. Or the Bible is humanity's religious experience explained for other people who will read it. Or the Bible is people trying to reach out to God, find God, seeking God, searching God. But when I read Exodus chapter 3, that's not what's going on. Moses is not seeking God. Moses is not listening for God. God, I would say, is seeking Moses, or showing up in Moses' life for the sake of his people Israel. And this keeps on happening in the Bible, right? So many characters, I'm just kind of going through the list really quickly in my mind, but so many characters are not looking for God. God comes, in some sense, plunging into their lives and shows up in amazing ways, like Noah and his family, or Abraham and Sarah, or here Moses, or certainly Jesus, God himself with us, or I think about Paul on the road to Damascus. He's not, where's Jesus? Where's Jesus? Where's Jesus? Jesus just plunges into his life. And I'm sometimes wondering also about our lives. Like, where is Jesus showing up? I don't want to ask, is Jesus showing up? I want to ask this morning, where do we see Jesus or Yahweh showing up? A third thing I'm thankful for this morning regarding our passage is not only is God I am who I am, but the name he actually says three times in our passage is I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, I think we need I am who I am. That's a good description of who God is. But if that's all we have, if that's all that God had told us about himself, I am who I am, it sounds kind of cerebral. It sounds kind of abstract. It sounds almost kind of philosophical. I am who I am. Okay, I get some sense of that. We could talk about that for a while. But when God says, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that sounds more concrete. Like these people who were actually walking on the earth and they were interacting with people, other people, they're interacting with God. That seems more concrete, more historical. And I find it amazing that God doesn't just say, I am the God who fills the heavens. I am the God who made the universe. I am who I am. He says, I am the God connected with Abram, Isaac, and Jacob. And if you read these stories of these people, you will find that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were not always really great people. Weren't always really the most godly people. They were people who were sometimes conniving and deceiving and disobedient and doubting. And the God who fills the heavens and who made the universe says, I'm the God connected with these three. Sometimes they were rascals. I'm the God connected with these three persons. And it makes me think about a little story from a guy named Blaise Pascal, who was a 17th century mathematician, philosopher, pretty smart guy. A number of years after he died, they found a piece of paper sewn into the inside of his coat. It was a piece of paper he had written about his religious experience. And he wrote, it's not all here on the slide here, but he said, in the year of grace, 1654, Monday, November 23rd, from about 10:30 at night till about 12:30 at night, just past midnight, he said this, fire, God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob, not of philosophers and scholars, certitude, heartfelt joy, peace, God of Jesus Christ, God of Jesus Christ, my God and your God, joy, 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 tears of joy. And when I hear about someone like that who experienced God, I'm thinking Blaise Pascal, smart guy, invented stuff, really like a brainiac, but he was looking or he found in his religious experience not the God of logic, not the God of the mind, but the God of Abram, Isaac, and Jacob, the God who is always personal, always wanting to connect with real people who have names, who have stories, who have families, who have connections, who sometimes have doubts and questions and moments of disobedience. For me, this just shocks me that God would be willing to and wanting to be connected with people like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I know for some of us this morning, when we hear those names, we right away think, oh, they were the godly patriarchs. They were the ones who followed God so well. Please read their stories and find out who they really were. Yes, they followed God, but there are also moments where they weren't following God. They weren't seeking for God. Sort of like Moses, just doing his ordinary life, a murderer, on the run, fugitive, wanted dead or alive by Pharaoh, and God shows up in his life.